Good morning, everyone. I'm continuing now with our new series on the Rays and the Initiations webinar commentary. And we are on page 327. This is part two of the Rays and the Initiations webinar commentary. And let's see, yes, up to three, almost at 328. And it's a lengthy section. I don't know how long it will take, but it builds upon all that has gone before on the 14 rules. And as I've said, with regard to the 14 rules, I have written out extensive commentary, which can be found on Makara, and maybe we'll have the opportunity simply to discuss those rules in a more conversational manner. So the teaching, we'll go on to from where we left off. Teaching, if true, must be in line with the past, so many forget that, and must provide scope for endeavor in the present, because that's when and where action occurs, and must also hold out further enlightenment for those who have succeeded or are succeeding in attaining the indicated goals. So, related to past, present, and future. Always giving us some place to go, but giving us an indication of what action is to be taken in the present. There must be a spiritual future indicated. This gives the incentive, this stimulates aspiration. This is in line with the idea of Sagittarius that the vision mobilizes the forces of the energy system and directs them in a certain along a certain line and allows for accomplishment. Accomplishment is driven by the aspiration which the vision provides. It is that which is required now. For many are attaining the goals proposed by the hierarchy, and others are working towards them. So the hierarchy never leaves us without further incentive. The taking of initiation is now often to be seen, and far more frequent, I think I'll get this together, than at any other time in history of the race. So humanity certainly is progressing, and all that seems to be coming to the surface and is coming to the surface is a great purgation, a great healing, as horrible as it may be. For those who have thus succeeded, the next step forward and the new spiritual enticement, note that word, because it speaks to the mobilization of our forces and the directing of desire as aspiration towards a particularly appealing goal. Those who have succeeded, the next step forward and the new spiritual enticement must be clearly disclosed. This is what he's going to do in this book, leading us on. Probably this is, in a way, an important bridging book towards the new release, the new installment of his teaching to be given after 2025. Evolution is not a static thing. Death cannot be the reward of living effort. So this is the perpetual motion of all things in cosmos and the return of the monad in extension, the immersed spirit, to its source, plus the gain which has occurred in its descent. To be static, to have attained all that can be attained, and to be at a complete standstill would be utter death, and, my brothers, there is no death. So some groups feel they have attained all that can be revealed and seek to impose that static revelation upon others. And this is against the very nature of the spirit and must be defeated. The continuity of revelation is one of the most important doctrines and gives us the possibility of continuous growth. There is no death. There is only progress from glory to glory, from great illuminations and demonstrations of achieved attainment, achieved energy, on to the next and greater. There is only progress from glory to glory, a moving forward from point to point on the divine way, certainly within a universe, and from revelation to revelation towards these points and revelations which are perhaps part of the goal of God himself. And by God, I suppose we mean the greater including logos, the greater inclusive logos. And there are always greater and greater logoi until the one universal logos itself. So there is no death, there is no confinement, there is no static condition, there is no condition in which there cannot be more, or even all itself. One thinks of what the universal logos faces upon the completion of its intention for having become a universe, and then there will be a return. Well, one can never leave it, really, but a return to the infinity of infinities, which is the absolute deity itself, which is the utmost more, we might say. So anyway, there is no stasis. There is no static condition when consciousness cannot be enlarged. God can be known ever more deeply, and in the ultimate state, God can be being, B-E-E-N, to an infinite degree. But that leads us, you know, off into philosophy, and basic idea here is that all is moving towards ever greater revelation, and I love that, you know, the idea moving from glory to glory. I want to make that bigger. Only progress from glory to glory, a movement forward, a moving forward from point to point on the divine way. And this includes, of course, the way of higher evolution, naturally, and from revelation to revelation. Continuity of revelation. This is a key feature in the New World religion and has much of retrogression against which to battle, for as we know, there are religions which feel that they have presented the last word of human possibility. So what the goals are upon the higher way is yet utterly unknown to you. He's going to present more about this, and has already in a way, even before writing this. But really, the goals are unknown, even if something of the nature of the path has been given. What divine qualities and objectives may be revealed to the Master and to the Christ as they tread the way which leads them off the cosmic physical plane, you cannot know and or sense, and if you could, you would not comprehend the meaning, because meaning deals with relationship, and probably we would have nothing to which to relate any such astonishing revelation. Eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, the things which God, the greater God, will reveal to those who tread the way to the inmost center, to those who love. And there's a hint here. We must, I think this is correct, we must love if we are to tread the way to the inmost center. I think we better capitalize those. Now, of course, for us, these inmost center would be considered the Pleiades, but obviously this is still a relative center, and the condition of retraction proceeds as is hinted, not so much here, but here. Let's see if I can get to that. Yes, it's hinted in this particular diagram, which is called Parabrahm, and you can see the retractions of all the sevens into a one, and each one is but one of seven, which is retracted into a one, and on and on and on. So we do not know, have no idea, eye hath not seen and ear hath not heard, what is the uppermost point into which retraction can occur. But we suspect here that treading the way to the inmost center requires a great love, because love is the energy of coalescence. It is bringing back together that which has been fragmented by the condition of consciousness arising in the emanative process, the limitations of consciousness arising in the emanative process, and love restores the higher realization and reamalgamates those points which have been apparently divided from each other through the emanative process. This ancient writing can be paraphrased as follows. It is impossible to realize the wonder of the future, which the planetary logos, and we're even dealing here with a relatively minor deity, though for us amazingly great deity. It is impossible to realize the wonder of the future which the planetary logos will unfold before those who have unfolded the second aspect, love. It involves us to participate in the reamalgamation of the apparently separated parts, and who are therefore full members of the hierarchy, because without love you cannot be, the center where the energy of love is anchored. So, without love, one cannot be a full member of the hierarchy. So, for those of us who are deeply addicted to knowledge, love is the next great step and makes it possible for us to join the Society of Organized and Illumined Minds, the Church Triumphant, the great spiritual hierarchy of our planet, which is, of course, great to us, yet a minor hierarchy when compared to the hierarchies on other planets, the sacred and the synthesizing planets. And obviously this hierarchicalization continues on and on. It is impossible to realize the wonder of the future, which, you know, through the initiatory process, the planetary logos, even up to the seventh initiation, where he is the initiator, will unfold before those who have unfolded the second divine aspect of love. And, you know, with the unfolding of the egoic lotus, the unfolding of that process of love is occurring, and who are therefore full members of the hierarchy. You can't, it's so interesting, you know, you talk about standing on the periphery of the ashram and possibly becoming a member of the hierarchy, and we see that with the fullest expression of love, and only then is it possible to really become such a full member of the hierarchy. This is a piece of sage advice. The love aspect must be developed. Okay. It is interesting to realize that the unfoldment of the love nature is that which opens the door, well, he's saying, which leads to the way of higher evolution, and nothing else will open it. Let us notice this. Nothing else will open it. It is interesting to realize that the unfoldment of the love nature is that which opens the door, which leads to the way of the higher evolution, and nothing else will open it. Certainly, you know, the other lords, the counter force, have tremendous intelligence, But the way to the higher evolution is not open to them because they have negated the love aspect in their energy system, or at least have refused to develop it. This way leads the master off the cosmic physical plane onto the cosmic astral plane, or to a level of cosmic awareness whereon is generated that cosmic impulse we call love. And that is on the cosmic astral plane that occurs. So the generation of cosmic love occurs on the cosmic astral plane. So whatever we call love now is a merest reflection of that which occurs on this high level and in the astral body, I suspect, of our planetary logos. That's probably how we experience it first. Later, opening up to the cosmic astral body of the solar logos and on and on. So maybe this, you know, really has to make an impression upon us. The leaving of the cosmic astral plane behind for the cosmic physical plane behind for the cosmic astral plane does continue on this way of higher evolution, as we have seen. The cosmic mental plane is involved, and even given the path that our logos is on, our solar logos, the cosmic buddhic plane. Those are just words to us. We can barely fathom what buddhi means, but we do get the sense of a huge opportunity which looms before all advancing emanated lives as they reamalgamate with their emanative source and thus rise towards higher and higher dimensions from which originally they descended anyway. Okay, so the cosmic astral plane, cosmic love, and love opening the door to the way of higher evolution, nothing else will open it. This is I must just simply say, so critically important. And if disciples in the modern age would realize that their entire future depends upon the development of the energy of love, then, well, a different approach would be used. It will be obvious to you that this treatise is not written to instruct members of the hierarchy, though I have seen in some of the rules, you know, at least an indication that the rule applies to members of the hierarchy, at least to those highly evolved, but probably true instruction in relation to that rule for members of the hierarchy would be different. So it's not written to instruct members of the hierarchy, but only for aspirants and disciples and initiates below the grade of the third initiation, but only for aspirants and disciples and initiates below the grade of the third initiation. Although, interestingly enough, a treatise on cosmic fire was written for initiates, and it seems to me that some of what is given here could be instructive even for initiates of the third degree, but I won't dispute what is said. It's just my estimation. Much that I will say will be somewhat blind or veiled in symbol. And much that I could say, if words existed of an adequate nature, will not be said. So we have the scope of the presentation is limited and defined as such, even though presenting ideas far in advance of our present understanding. Those that have eyes to see and ears to hear will read between the lines correctly, interpret my symbols, hints, and references. So let's just say initiates may benefit by correctly reading, spiritual reading. To many, what I will say will be as meaningless as a treatise on cosmic fire to the average reader. Are we that? Well, certainly if we put that book before the average intelligent person of the world, it would be difficult for such an individual to fathom what was being said. It's difficult for us. To many, what I will say will be as meaningless as a treatise on cosmic fire to the average reader, and as the entire theme of initiation is to the ignorant and undeveloped man. Well, you know, sometimes think of the analogy, we have our pets, you know, as intelligent as they are in their own way, but they're not fully understanding our language, even though they may understand a few words, and we're not going to get them to read even a child's book, are we? So there is quite a range, a scope of differentiation between those who can fathom the mysteries and those who are earlier on in their stage of human development. Much, however, should be a practical service to the struggling disciple. Well, there we can find ourselves, can't we? The struggling disciple, struggling with all kinds of forces within ourselves, our energy system, which would pull us back into lesser stages of consciousness. Much, however, should be a practical service to the struggling disciple. And I want in these concluding pages to fire his zeal, to deepen his understanding, to stimulate his capacity to love and enlighten his mind. What an objective. You know, Master D.K. has tremendous zeal. That is obvious, and it's even obvious from some of the stories told about him in earlier days. So what I want to do in these concluding pages of a treatise on the seven rays is to fire his zeal, deepen his understanding, stimulate his capacity to love, even in such an advanced book as this, which challenges the mind so much, and of course to enlighten his mind. The evocation of the will, the revelation of love, the illumination of the mind, which is the plan in a nutshell. Such is what I seek to do. On his part, let him approach the subject with deep humility, with a meditative and reflective attitude, realizing that the answers will not come immediately, and with a refusal to materialize the presented concepts, as is so easy to do. The minute we materialize them, we limit them in a manner which is most misleading when compared to the truth which DK is trying to present. Let him refuse to step down the teaching to the level of the physical consciousness. In these words, I have conveyed a basic hint, and it's almost as if to say, let him work beyond the brain consciousness, which is responsible for so many illusions, including the illusion of time and space as we normally experience it. So DK is telling us how to approach this material and what we can expect of it, and with a deep sense of proportion, you know, realizing we are getting into materials here which are far beyond our normal comprehension, and so let us not presume to know too much. We are told that pride is a limitation. I think we can see why, because when we are the victim of pride, we are quite satisfied with what we have learned and what we appear to be, and we do not strive further to become better, and we do not look further to know more than we already know. We think we have arrived at the final condition. And it's said to go before a fall. Pride goes before a fall because we so often are preoccupied with our own condition that we don't see where we're going, and we simply trip. So we are tiny little mites, the smallest of the small. Well, everything in a way is the smallest of the small. No matter how great a definite thing is, it's the smallest of the small. But that's another matter. But anyway, we join all things in comparison with the infinity of infinities, becoming in comparison, even though in a way you can't compare because we are that, but becoming in comparison, the smallest of the small, and for the smallest of the small, a deep humility is the proper attitude. Love and light are the great revealers. Well, you know, things come to light, but maybe some of us have realized that in a state of love, much more is revealed than without it. So if we find ourselves, love is a great revealer. It reveals the motives of the heart. It reveals the interior nature of another. In a way, it's much faster in its revelatory powers than light alone. So love and light are the great revealers, and if the student truly seeks to understand and profit by what I am endeavoring to teach, let him love all men more deeply, and let him see to it that his light shines forth in a dark place. What great advice here. If we want to understand this book, which is, after all, written within a fivefold treatise, which is characterized by the second ray of love, wisdom, let him love all men more deeply. We can see what is the consciousness of a master of the wisdom and how far we are from such a consciousness. Let him love all men more deeply, and let him see to it that his light shines forth in a dark place. Let him be a bearer of the light, a carrier of the light, for in that light he shall see light. Light ever reveals a greater light. So as we pursue deeper understanding through the use of the light, ever greater lights will appear within the light we can already wield, revealing a type of light which lies on ahead and which we cannot yet wield or direct. It is the lesser light within that reveals the greater light. Let us find the light within our own interior nature, and after all, every being is a unit of light at a certain point of tension, and as we increase the light, by wielding the light we can wield, we will discover ever deeper sources of light. In other words, along the chain of hierarchy, along the path of the way of ever of higher evolution, ever greater sources of light will be revealed. When the light of the soul combines with the light of the lower man, then that fused and blended light will enable the aspirant to see the door which opens upon the way of higher evolution. And that light of the soul, we have to remember at this point, this light of the soul is the light of the spiritual triad. Because the spiritual triad is a truer soul than the encapsulated soul on the higher mental plane. It is what D.K. calls the true ego, with a capital E. It is a greater form of consciousness. Different types of souls are simply different ring pass knots of, or rings pass knot of consciousness. So the ring pass knot of consciousness on the higher mental plane, though greatly expanded over what the personality itself can realize, is quite limited. So if we really want to know, let us love and let us use the light. Let him love all men more deeply. All men, not just those who appeal to us or have some attraction for us, you know, people we like. Not just people we like. That would be the glamour of sentiment, wouldn't it? We would influenced in our understanding by our likes and dislikes, and that would be a bias, and that would put us in a condition where we would fail to realize the true nature of the one we sought to understand. We would be biased. All right, let's go on here. In considering our theme, I propose to divide what I have to say according to my usual custom as follows. You know, this is, DK is a highly organized mind. He's a member of the Society of Organized and Illumined Minds, and so he lays out with great clarity what he's going to deal with, the aspirant and the mysteries of initiation, the entering of the two doors. And, you know, when we talk about the two-leaf door and so forth, we have to think about the Ajna Center, which is, in a way, a two-leaf door. The entering of the ashrams, and much has been given, of course, on that already in the Discipleship in the New Age books, which are such a treasure for those who truly aspire beyond the realm of glamour. The dual life of the initiatory process, well, we have the technique of duality we have to understand. It probably involves the Antikarana. We certainly have the dual life of the disciple, and this seems to continue into those who are undergoing the initiatory process. And here, the science of the Antikarana. There's more. The aspirant and the major initiations. Notice the word aspirant is used, even though we're dealing with major initiations. And those, well, let's say, from the third and beyond, but also, in this particular book, he takes us to a discussion of the ninth initiation, never leaving us without spiritual incentive and a vision of that which lies far ahead and which we can continue to pursue with great zeal. I think zeal is something that must never die. Master Maurya tells us all the time to strive fierily. Well, he's a first-ray master. He's identified very much with the sign Aries, I think. His Remembrance Day is March 24th. Strive fierily. And this, I think, must be the case in this fiery universe all the way to the point of ultimate return in any particular universe when God is all in all, as far as the universe goes. So the aspirant of the major initiation, the relation of the seven rays to the initiations, and as I've said, each initiation has a particular ray which is most related to it, but in the video book on the Egoic Lotus, I've talked about all the rays in relation to at least the first three initiations. The significance of the initiations, probably in the modern world, the aspirant and the seven centers, and maybe these will be planetary centers as well. I have given you here and elsewhere in my writings all that it is at this time possible to give anent, the planetary centers and the rays, including the rays of nations and races, and we will remember that section in Esoteric Astrology Part 2. Or is it Part 3? Well, anyway, in the latter part of Esoteric Astrology. So you will find a wealth of information hidden in my various books if due search is made and the material is gathered into a coherent whole. And this is the making of compilations now greatly facilitated by our sort of mini search engine in the CD-ROM given to the Alice Bailey books. Literally a wealth of information. More, you know, there's so much in there, more than we can ever know, more than we suspect, and until we begin this search and start gathering it together, we will not know how much of revelation is hidden. And when the various scattered points of revelation, as it were, are brought together, when the pieces of knowledge, as it were, are brought together, they produce still more knowledge. So it's not just the items which are scattered. It's also what they represent in terms of knowledge when they are brought together. So bringing items of knowledge together Bringing items of knowledge together will reveal still further, greater items of knowledge. So I suggest that you study and compare, read and search topically, and extract all that I have to say about the various nations and their governing constellations and planetary rulers. Well, you know, we're going to try to do this somewhat, and in the various classes that we have taught in the University of Seven Rays and Moria Federation, there's quite a bit of topical study. But right now, you know, there's much to be gained from the horizontal reading of the books and then from the topical research. I'd like to do that for items of astrology, where all related to a particular force or energy is brought together. And so it could be under any subject. We have marvelous compilations in the Ageless Wisdom compilation Yahoo group, and you know, you can avail yourself of that. Now, this will facilitate research into the relation of the planetary centers to the systemic centers, the solar systemic centers, right? The sacred planets and the energies pouring through them from the constellations which they rule in the esoteric sense. To rule something in the esoteric sense almost means to limit, to rule means to limit, to condition the amount of energy which can, so to speak, let's say, get through. It's like a valve, a reducing valve, let us say. So a planet which rules a constellation is a reducing valve. A planet which, so to speak, rules a constellation is a reducing valve. It cannot let the entirety of the energy of the constellation through. Well, it is not capable of doing so, and those with whom the planet was in contact would be destroyed if all of that energy came through, and so would the planet itself. Okay, so topical study. Compare, read, and search topically. It's a never-ending process. I wish I had another 50 years right now to engage in this, but time is short, says the personality, and one must do what one can do within those limited time spans. So this is one of the paradoxes of occultism, but it can be understood if the student remembers that the centers in his etheric body rule insofar as they are receptive or non-receptive to the influences emanating from the planet via the planetary centers. So they rule, they determine what types of energies will be received. Another meaning of rulership is sort of association and correlation, determining what types of energies will be most normally received from still greater sources. Okay. Now, determining, right. It would not be advisable for me to give out the relations of the planetary centers to the centers in the human being. Well, you know, in a way he's already done that sufficiently for those who can understand. This may have been done sufficiently for those who can grasp the correlation. I'm not saying I am one, but I think certain hints have appeared, and it is possible to make that kind of correlation. I mean, really, in order to reconstitute the entirety of our contents of consciousness as a whole, we have to have the ability to correlate, to see the lines of similarity and the various types of distinction. It's a Mercurian act. It's a vast correlative study in which we are engaged, and the result of it shall be to render the appearance of wholeness where before we saw fragmentation. And because of that appearance of wholeness, we shall be overcoming illusion, which is based, at least as I understand it, upon the perception of fragmentation, or such a form of perception as yields fragmentation in the consciousness. So he doesn't want to give out the relation of the planetary centers to the centers of the human being, you know. Well, planetary centers perhaps on this earth, we've certainly understood that Shambhala is correlated to the human head center and hierarchy to the heart center and so forth. But perhaps we're talking about denser types of centers that are related to the etheric physical planet itself. Anyway, there is not enough love present as yet to balance such knowledge and to offset any possible misuse with its dire consequences. And we see that even with atomic energy right now, prematurely released, there's not enough love to balance the release of this terribly destructive energy, which can be and misused. He said only certain nations and peoples could be trusted with the secret of atomic energy, and now we have the great danger of nuclear proliferation, and many who are ruled primarily by ignorance and by an emotional state of mind may have these weapons at their disposal. So, well, we have to survive this, don't we? The reason that I include them in the above outline is to show the organic wholeness of our theme. Indeed. For the life of man encompasses the abstract and subjective as well as the outer physical levels of the manifested world, and we must appreciate both and the relationship between both. So it's not enough simply to have an abstract state of mind. One must understand how these abstractions relate to the densifications which are more familiar to the concrete mind with which we usually function. Because your life is mostly centered on the level of the concrete mind. Your words and speech will indicate your thought. Okay, well, this is in the 15 councils, I think it's number 12, in the Treatise on White Magic, page 473, you know, telling us how we can, in fact, achieve adeptship if we will simply have the humility to follow the kind of advice which is there given. And it's mostly advice of a purificatory nature. Really, all the books aspect each other, and they all interplay with each other, and the combination of all the many things that are given in a manner diversified and spread out will be a great intensification of understanding and knowledge. I have made two affirmations during the past years anent the hierarchy. One was that as a result of the cleansing of the earth through the medium of the World War, notice this, the World War, 1914 to 1945, it's as if it was still going on when it wasn't going on. It was probably going on the inner planes, and the armistice, which occurred in 1918, and here we are just exactly 100 years after the declaration of war by so many nations in 1914, that the armistice of 1918 was simply a kind of ceasefire, and the war continued all the way up to 1945, and it's what is that, a 31-year process? I mean, about one Saturn cycle. As a matter of fact, it was the war was won by the time the sun moved northward in 1942. So, you know, just about one Saturn cycle. The cleansing of the Earth, and not just the outer parts, but etherically, astrally, mentally, and through the suffering to which humanity has been subjected, with a consequent purifying effect, which we'll demonstrate later. So he does say, you know, that suffering and purification go hand in hand, it will be possible for the hierarchy to externalize itself and function upon the physical plane. It would not have done so without the purification. And of course, Pluto and Vulcan have been very involved in that purification, especially Pluto, you know, the planet of death and termination and expulsion, purgation, you know, it gets it out of your system. And there was so much concealed in the lower aura of the human race itself, which reached the surface and expressed in all its horror, but still was ejected from the human energy system. The way it looks today, you might wonder about that, but are we in the position, as the Christ said, where having cleansed our house of many devils, now have many more, because we did not tend to the process of refusing them entry again. Anyway, this will indicate a return to the situation which existed in Atlantean days when, using the biblical symbolism, God himself walked among men. So even in those days, the hierarchy was present with humanity. Divinity was present in physical form because the members of the hierarchy were guiding and directing the affairs of humanity as far as innate free will existed. Such a limitation, in a way, this hierarchy can do nothing, you know. If humanity refuses to use its free will properly, nor can hierarchy prevent the use of that free will. Anyway, the day is coming when again God will walk among men, and we are considered, you know, part of the forerunning group. We're in the era of the forerunner. We are, as a group, John the Baptist, we are proclaiming that the Christ will come. We go before him. And we have to alert, sometimes, you know, feeling like a voice crying in the wilderness, but we have to alert humanity to the coming of the spiritual hierarchy of our planet and to the return of the great Lord, the reappearance of the great Lord, the world teacher. So on a higher turn of the spiral, this again will happen, and the masters will walk openly among men. We will surely be known for all we are, so we have to undergo a great purification in order to work with them, because if we were to be exposed to their energy in an impure state, there would be a freezing of the negative energies, and it's like, is it Master Moria, Master Hilarion, who speaks about putting the muddy foot, the mired foot, on the electric ladder, and it freezes you in place. You can only imagine. So we have to cast out all the impurities so that we can climb the electrified ladder to higher states of awareness and not be trapped by our own impurities, which are frozen into a congealed condition when exposed to the energies of hierarchy. The masters will walk openly among men. Okay. That's number one. And secondly, the hierarchy will restore the ancient mystery. So number one, the masters walk openly among men. And number two, the hierarchy will then restore the ancient mysteries, of which our present masonry is the example, or a strong example, as crystallized as it is in some instances. Now there is a reformation of masonry going on through the AUM, Ancient Universal Mysteries group, directed by Keith Bailey, and there is hope that a deeper, more fluid, more occult understanding of these mysteries is now being prepared. Secondly, the hierarchy can then restore the ancient mysteries, the ancient landmarks, which must never be changed because they are true under all circumstances. They are foundational. They are purposeful. so earnestly preserved in the Masonic tradition and which have been securely embalmed. Well, it sounds a bit mummified, you know, but we have to raise it to life in the Masonic ritual awaiting the day of resurrection. So we certainly know that Masonry will be resurrected. Right now there are movements in that direction. The resurrection has not come. It can't until the hierarchy is openly working with humanity and clearer instruction can be given. All right. Just trying to see where we go here. These ancient mysteries were originally given to humanity by the hierarchy and were in their turn received by the hierarchy from the Great White Lodge on Sirius, a far greater lodge. Sometimes called even the Blue Lodge, you know. Maybe the Blue Lodge is part of that Great White Lodge. A far greater lodge on high. They contain the clue to the evolutionary process, hidden in numbers, in words. They veil the secret of man's origin and destiny, picturing for him in rite and ritual the long, long path which he must tread. It is of such great importance that these new attempts to resurrect the mysteries through Masonry and through other means achieve a kind of perpetuity and continuity which will lead into the true restoration under the supervision of the Masters. They provide also, when rightly interpreted and correctly presented, the teaching which humanity needs in order to progress from darkness to light, from the unreal to the real, and from death to immortality. Well, that's the mysteries as a whole. There's more in the mysteries, as D.K. says, than is found in Masonry, but Masonry has a great deal. So they, and let us put here the mysteries, provide also, when rightly interpreted and correctly presented, the teaching which humanity needs in order to progress from darkness to light, from the unreal to the real, from death to immortality. It's sort of looking at the first three initiations. The unreal to the real has a lot to do with overcoming glamour, and death to immortality suggests the third initiation and beyond. Any true Mason, I guess one with understanding, right, who understands even if only to a slight degree the implications of that which in which he participates will recognize this most ancient of Oriental prayers, giving the key to the 3 degrees of the Blue Lodge. And by that we mean, although other degrees can be included, we mean the Entered Apprentice, EA, Fellowcraft, FC, and the Master Mason, MM. And DK refers to them and also gives them their names, but does not elaborate on the specifics of the rituals. I mention here the Masonic purpose because it is closely related to the restoration of the mysteries and has held the clue down the ages to that long-awaited restoration, to the platform upon which the restored teaching can be based, and Masonry will provide that platform, augmented by books like Initiation, Human, and Solar, and the structure which can express in powerful ritual and in organized, detailed rites the history of man's moving forward on the path of return. It's amazing. So the structure which can express in powerful ritual and in organized, detailed rites the history of man's moving forward upon the path of return. It's difficult to make a move to restore the mysteries. Even through Masonry, man's mind is so concrete at his present level. And so it will materialize and it will misunderstand. And so there is much teaching which must be presented in order to make the mind more fluid so that it will no longer concretize everything, materialize everything into a form which only vaguely resembles the inner truth. So whoever is involved in the restoration of the mysteries and the bringing of the inner truth to humanity has a great struggle on his hands, because as we look at the consciousness of humanity presently, we can see how many millions and even billions are nowhere near the possibility of these types of realizations. And yet, you know, with the externalization of the hierarchy and the coming of the Christ over the next 2,000 years, much will be accomplished, much of a nature we cannot fathom. We have only to look at what has occurred during the Piscean era, the last 2,000 years or so. Maybe that can give us a springboard to imagine what might occur during the three Aquarian decanates of Saturn, Mercury, and Venus, leading us into that period of brotherly love at last under Venus, after much difficulty at first under Saturn and much illumination under Mercury in the second decanate. So we have a ways to go, but we are already pointing towards our possibilities in such organizations as Masonry, when truly understood, really can direct man upon the proper path. Well, I'm going to say that this is the end of the Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentaries Program 2, and we went from pages, physical plan, that won't do, let's just call it 321, to whatever, to 330, have we? No, 327, that's it. 327 to page 331. And beginning of Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary Program 3, and we're beginning with page 331. I think at this point it would be wise to close with the great invocation. Here we are. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, we are, we reached the point where we can go on to the next program shortly. And for now, I'll just say there's much to think about here. This is still of an introductory nature, obviously, and we're getting into a section of the book which is simply wonderful and so illuminating. Well, we can't say, you know, the 14 rules are amazing, and we must review them constantly. But here, here's the bridging material towards the new installment, which is coming. Okay, we'll see you shortly. See you shortly.